I don't want to hear anybody talking about, oh, it's too hard or I can't do it. I did it. I was 25 in another country, didn't know anything about commercial real estate, and then just went and dropped $100,000+ on a deal and got right into it.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I'm the principal of Five Talents Capital. We're a San Antonio, Texas real estate investment firm, and we're actively invested in 1,500 doors of commercial real estate worth $150 million, much of which is right here in San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo City, baby. I'm also a fund manager, a capital allocator, and a servant leader who learned how to invest like the 1%. And on the Five Talents Podcast, I enjoy helping others learn and doing the same. So if you're seeking investment strategies to catapult your family wealth and generate passive income, even in today's volatile market, this show is for you. Because each week we're bringing you interviews with PE firms, investment advisors, financial planners, tax strategists, VC funds, and many others who are highly skilled in handling money, good stewards of capital, and individuals who advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So each show, we're going to provide you insights and actionable steps that you can implement to become a better investor. You're always going to learn something that you can apply in your own investment journey on the Five Talents Podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. All right. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the Five Talents Podcast. We're super excited today because, as always, we have some amazing guests. But today, I'm very happy to have Mr. Joseph Bramante on the show. How's it going, Joseph?
Doing well, man. Doing well. How are you doing?
Man, I can't complain. There's all kinds of things, challenges, obstacles, trials, tribulations, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, man, that the Lord is good. God is good. I have two beautiful children, beautiful wife at the house. And every event, even the failures, are ones that we're learning from. So I can't complain at all, man.
Absolutely, brother. We're alive, another day on this earth.
Here we go. Man, I appreciate you joining. For those that don't know Joseph, he is the CEO of Triarch Real Estate Partners. And man, they have, like, you know, Joseph, if I'm correct in this, like 1,600 plus doors. So a lot of commercial real estate, a lot of multifamily. And it's no small amount. It's $230-240+ million worth of commercial real estate. So almost $250 million in one form, fashion. I'm sure you've probably done and traded and spot and sold more of it in the past. So there's a lot of education, a lot of insight, a lot of really good nuggets that I'm sure you're going to share with the audience. But in your own words, why don't you tell us just briefly who you are and what you do, and we'll start a great conversation here.
Absolutely. So I started off as an engineer in corporate America and then worked in oil and gas for a little while in Louisiana. Moved here originally for work at Exxon, and they shipped me overseas. And that's when I got the bug for real estate. And I saw my managers buying these rental properties and decided to go and not buy a house, but buy a whole apartment complex. And so we bought one. And fast forward to today, you know, we've done over 375 million transactions. We've traded about 2,000 doors. We've sold a couple, as you mentioned. And now we've transitioned into development. So we're a fully integrated company, about 80 employees. We have a construction company, a property manager company, and an asset acquisition company, as well as a development, you know, a spudding development company. We got about 500 doors under development right now. We're excited about the future, young company growing, a lot of energy.
All right, man. Congratulations. That's some pretty big, bold moves. And just, I'm sure it, as we'll talk about, it doesn't happen overnight, right? This is the one thing that I hear a lot of people that ask me, how do I do this? I want to retire and I want to have passive income and I want to create 10, for some reason, everybody's numbers, 10 grand a month passive. And I'm like, okay, what do you have today? Like, nothing. It's going to take a while, man. You got a little bit of work, but, so, you know, talking about that, it didn't happen overnight. What was the year when you were, what year was it when you were working with oil and gas and you did your first deal? When was that?
That was 2011. Okay. And I only did that just to try and accelerate my retirement. I hadn't really bought in. I actually never read Rich Dad, Poor Dad until many years later. I had read some other books on multifamily and just got the numbers and the basics down and then went and bought a property. I was 25 at the time. I was living overseas in Papua New Guinea. And so I had to go to the U.S. Embassy to notarize my loan documents to purchase the property in 2011. So I don't want to hear anybody talking about, oh, it's too hard or I can't do it.
Yeah.
Yes, you can get it. I did it. I was 25 in another country, didn't know anything about commercial real estate, and then just went and dropped $100,000+ on a deal and got right into it.
That's awesome, man. Jump in with both feet, even if you're in a different country with a full-time job and all kinds of stuff, man. So the trials and obstacles and challenges are something you have to fight through. And before we go too far into the real estate, I always love talking about mindset. And if you can remember back then, what were some of the mindsets, the themes that were going on, fears, worries, concerns, doubts, where you just like gung ho, hey, no doubt, no fear, I'm in it. What was some of the things that were going on in your mind back then?
It's good to be ignorant, I'd say, and young. I was 25. I didn't fully understand, but I also knew I had plenty of time. And what I saw, though, was I saw my managers buying real estate. I saw on the particular project that I was on, a lot of the demographics of that project really interesting. You had people like me and others who are really young, and then you had people who are retirement age and exiting. There was really nobody in the middle. So people were either coming there to make a lot of money or coming back to pad their retirement fund before they fully retire. And so I saw all these people like in their late 60s coming back and working. And I was like, I don't want to be working on these projects in foreign countries away from family just so I can get the last couple hundred K in my account. So I recognized I needed to do something that if I stay down this path, this career man path, I'm going to be in their same shoes, 30 years from now. And so I decided to do something different. Saw one manager buying real estate, and that was when I started reading books about it. And even then, I never thought to start a business or had this big master plan that I was going to have all these units. I just started with one. And I said, I'm just going to buy one property and we'll see what happens. I was still investing in the stock market. I had an invention I was working on. I had all kinds of stuff that I was doing. So it was just like one of many things. I was determined, though, to get out of this corporate model and get off on my own somehow, one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for illuminating that. I think it helps a lot of other people. And your youth, like you said, did you say ignorance?
Because if I knew what I knew today, I wouldn't have done it.
I love that piece. It reminds me, so me and my wife have gone scuba diving a number of times. And the first time that we went scuba diving, we went in Cozumel. And Cozumel, unbeknownst to us, we just went. We're like, okay, one of the top scuba diving places in the world, right? And when you go underwater, it's like football fields is what it feels like of coral. And you're super far down in these dives. And when we went out of the boat and they took us out there, they're doing this flip chart and they're showing, hey, this is the respirator. This is the thing, this is the, how this works. This is your weights. And they're doing this flip book. And it took us a little while, like 10, 15 minutes in, and they're explaining all this stuff and half of it's going over our heads, right? I'm just like, never done it before. So I asked the question, are we going to try this on the beach first? And they're like, no, we're going to the dive, like 100 feet down or whatever the number is. And then I think everybody woke up that moment and was like, okay, can you start this flip book again? And when we went, it was amazing, gorgeous, no issues, no worries. Went on two dives. They're like a full tank, both of them. And it was beautiful. It's bliss. But when we went the first time scuba diving in the States in Florida, they made us go into a swimming pool first because we were not certified. And they took us through all of the things that could go wrong underwater. And they made you take off your mask underwater. Your face mask, out your respirator. What if you lose it? You got to do these maneuvers and movements. And then you really realize, oh, shoot, like all kinds of things could go wrong under there. But the ignorance part allows you to just say, I'm going to move forward. So sometimes you have to be bold at sometimes. And then sometimes, hey, it's good to know there's a ton of risk. And now I've got to factor those in, right?
And you know, I'm an avid diver as well. I've got 100 plus dives in Papua New Guinea. We would go diving all the time on these Pacific wrecks. So I resonate 100%. I actually got certified in Australia on the Great Barrier Reef. And they were very regulated, right? Make you do all these drills. But then in Papua New Guinea, like they didn't even check my card. They just let's go. They were in. So if I knew or not, they didn't even question. They knew I was paying. I remember we went on one dive. It was a 45 meter dive, which is like 150 feet underwater.
Yes.
You know, you got to have open water certification. It's only good to, what is it, like 60 feet, I think, maybe?
Something. Yeah. Not 145 feet down.
Yeah. And they let me go. And I remember going down, I could hear my heart racing. I was just like, be calm. Everything's going to be okay. And it was fine. We were fine. And, you know, worst case, you just kind of go up. But I want to build it was ignorance, but also confidence. I had done really well in my career, and I knew that no matter what kind of problem that I encountered, I would figure it out. Like I would figure out a solution for it either at that moment or I would see it coming and figure it out. But I think it was a combination of those two, just being a little bit fearless, knowing that I don't know all of this, but I know enough to be dangerous. As they say in engineering school, like when you graduate, you don't know anything about engineering, you just have to be dangerous. And the rest of it, you learn on the job. So I knew enough to be dangerous. And I knew that whatever else came my way, I would figure it out.
Yeah, that mindset is so key, because a lot of times we are endeavoring in something new. If you want to go break some records, you want to go try something new, you want to go do something you haven't done before, you're going to have to wade in some water, be in some water that you've never quite been in before. And you have to have that confidence that no matter what happens, we're gonna find some ways out of it. And was your family real estate in the past? Is this your first generation ish in your family? Or
I grew up the old school way. You buy a house and you pay it off. And that was, and my dad, even to this day, he's upset because he's had to put a mortgage on the house to pay off some things. But he's really old school, doesn't like debt, wants to have everything paid off. And I'm just like, man, that's how I grew up. I didn't know anything. He was an engineer, so I naturally followed in his footsteps.
You were an engineer. Yeah.
I was just brainwashed from a kid. You know, you're going to be an engineer. You're going to be an engineer. And then I became an engineer.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really an option. The concept of an entrepreneur was alien to me. I didn't even know what that was until after I already became one. I was like, oh, I guess I am an entrepreneur.
I'm an entrepreneur. That's awesome, man. Congrats on that. And you've come a long ways in those 11 years or however many years since you first started, since 2011. And now, man, you're crushing. You're doing a lot of amazing things. So why don't let's fast forward a little bit. Tell us about this new development stuff, man. That sounds awesome. Or whatever area you'd like to focus on.
Yeah. You know, new development has been a big learning curve. It's tough. It's not, you know, acquisitions. To be honest, it's pretty easy. I mean, once you've done one or once you've done a couple, you've basically done them all. There's a few different scenarios you'll deal with, but it's basically rinse and repeat one after the other. With development, no such thing, because every deal is completely different. Depending on the city you're working in, the type of project you're doing, they're just really complex. And with acquisitions, you've got a very linear process to get from contract date to closing date. Mm-hmm. With development, no such thing. You've got a density study, you do some market studies, you throw some ideas down, you run some numbers, change some things, rerun numbers, change some more things. So you're constantly changing the design, trying to get the right kind of mix of units and density, the right typology of the property, whether it's a garden, wrap, or podium. And then just working with different GCs one night to figure out how you get your price down. So there's a lot of things that go into development that you don't really, we just take for granted on acquisitions. Like it's all just done already. But there's a lot of thought that went into why certain buildings are where they are that are just not really even a part of our acquisition process. Anyway, learning a lot. We've got four right now. We killed one. And that's just part of the thing. You'll get down the road, you'll spend some money on projects, and unfortunately sometimes they just don't work out. But we've got one out in El Campo that we're just finalizing a loan on. And then we'll be breaking ground on that. We got one here in light rail here in Houston. It's a podium. And so we're just finishing up concept package on that. And we're doing a wrap. We just had our meeting with the city on this wrap deal we're doing. A wrap is where you get the prefabricated garage and the buildings wrapped around it. So we had our first meeting with the city yesterday on that one. And that was, they had like 20 people on this Zoom call and everybody's like jumping in with their different things. Like you check the fire lane, you know, this it's got to be this way, or you've got these different easements around here you got to watch out for, or just all kinds of stuff that we don't even think about. I think what was the weirdest thing that came up in that call? The one that I'm doing on the light rail has this whole like fenestration thing, or it's like what? Basically the skin of the building. But there's a, because of where we are on the light rail, there's some additional codes about basically how they want it to look. And so we've got to have a certain walkway because it's a very walkable area. And then they want certain penetrations like windows and doors intended for retail. So anyway, it's just, it's adding a complication to that project that was intended or is intended to be fully multifamily. So you work through all these problems. You go and you meet the city and then back and forth. So it can take years to get a project done. It can take months. But by done, I mean finalized. I mean like plans set in place. And then you got the whole bidding process and you get a loan and the debt is completely different. One, it's recourse.
Yeah.
So get comfortable with recourse and signing your life away.
Yeah.
And then interest reserves and all this stuff. So it gets very real, very serious. And then you're just your underwriting, right? For us on acquisitions, you've got historical financials to go through, but development.
Excel is a little longer. Excel, it's a few more tabs.
Even that, but it's blank. It's blank. You're just like putting in all the numbers. There's no benchmark. Well, you got benchmarks for the properties, but no historical financials. Underwriting on acquisitions also is a lot simpler, for being honest, because you're going to look at the financials previously. You're going to make a few adjustments. You might do some adjustments to your income for your value add you're doing, but most of your expenses are set, some minor escalations, and that's it. For here, everything from the GPR down to the taxes, you've got to calculate and estimate what they are. So anyway. Sorry for my rant, but development's been fun to learn on, and it's been a challenge, but I like the complication of it.
Yeah, there's definitely additional complication. It sounds like you guys have done, it's five projects, maybe four that you decided to move forward on. So was that within the past year, couple of years, or?
No, those are all breaking ground. The next one already broke ground. The other three are breaking ground in the next 12 months.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So what was the big shift? The catalyst for you to say, you know what, I'm going to do more than just buy existing. I'm going to move to development.
Hey, in 2016, we started noticing how low cap rates were getting and how the spread between the asking price for these multifamily existing deals versus development deals was really getting compressed. And so it's like, man, if I'm going to spend all this money for a property, why not just go and build it? It's just a little bit more. And prior to that, there's a pretty big delta between what it costs to buy something already built, like 80s, 90s, versus building it. Then that delta got compressed. And so it just made more sense to just go ahead and build it. And then once we got into it, we saw also that there's a lot more profit to be made on development deals. You can grow your capital a lot better. And so we're like, financially, this makes a lot of sense for us and our investors to go this route. Versus trying to shave pennies on value add deals, and we're going to increase the revenue, but there's only so much you can increase the value of a deal versus buying raw dirt or even buying a covered land play. Your capital appreciation over a shorter period of time can be quite significant.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing we like is just they're shorter. They're 3 to 4 year deals. You're in and out, and just rinse and repeat. You do them well. You just keep recycling the capital. You do them over and over. They're not cash flow plays, which is a big, big no-no for some people. They really love the cash flow.
Yeah. It's a different type of investment and investor and a different goal and outcome. But when you see a 36% or a 28% or a higher percentage than a 16 or 15 or 12, then you're like, oh, okay, I am taking additional risk. There's a lot of additional risk. Pull something out of the ground. Any one of the things that Joseph's talking about could slow you down, could hinder you, could pause you, stop you, add additional cost, they're the bigger return, right? That's the
risk. Yeah, I mean, usually when you're as investors, they really want to wait to the key word you're looking for is shovel ready. If you see a development deal and it says shovel ready, then you're good to go. That means it's fully permitted. They've probably got their debt in place, but there's no, most of the surprises are behind you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Five Talents Podcast with me, your host, Abel Pacheco. And since you're listening to the show right now, I wanted to break for a moment to tell you thank you so much for subscribing and following the show. I also want to give you access to our simple wealth case study for busy professionals that we explain how we invested in $150 million of commercial real estate to generate passive income. So I'm sharing with you how I personally build wealth like the 1% and explaining how you can create passive income in real estate without having to manage it yourself. So do yourself a favor, take a moment now and go to www.5talents.capital. That's the number 5 talents, T-A-L-E-N-T-S dot capital. And you can register, watch our video recorded case study, and we're going to give you access to our investment club as well. If you want to see like all of our next moves, every single investment move that we make, future investment opportunities, and even perhaps invest alongside us, go to our website now. We look forward to sharing more. You can register at www.5talents.capital. And we look forward to having you as part of the club.
Did you entitle those land, those pieces, those deals? You entitled them from start to finish, or did you buy them shovel ready?
I entitled them from start to finish.
Yeah.
That's a fun process. Like one piece, it was 26 acres, and we had to stitch it together and get all that, and had to go through a plan development or the rezoning process, and that's pain right there. I've never just standing up on a podium and getting yelled at by how you're a bad person because you're trying to build apartments. And there's a term there called NIMBY, the not in my backyard. And it's very real. People will come out and they'll just say the most ridiculous things about how you're going to bring criminals and low income and all this stuff. You're going to hurt their property values, all of which has been debunked, but it's just, they still say it. And then you still got to defend it. And so it's fun.
we've done two. I wouldn't say it sounds like you've definitely built a new construction arm to your company, a brand new construction company. Is that fair?
Yeah, but we're not doing the development yet. We're just doing the construction side. It's just for our own renovations and third party renovations.
Got it. We've partnered on two deals where, you know, one lead sponsor, one where I'm more of a general partner that lets someone else do a ton of the hard work. We're the hard hat, so to speak, with boots on the ground in Louisiana. But we did a build to rent that was 98 doors and took it from the ground in, you know, all the entitlement process, the portion of working with the city to allow us to do that. And then getting up to the first 8 doors are up and we're on our way to 90, right? So that's a little bit easier for me because the team that I'm working with, there are local boots on the ground. They're builders and developers that have done single family houses for years.
Yeah.
So they already had the expertise. They already knew how to do single family houses. What we did was underwriting and modeling for build to rent, which is new. And they're like, okay, this is great. So we worked that one.
We're in Louisiana.
In Lafayette.
Lafayette,
just right outside of it. And that was it was like that project, seeing it come to fruition. I actually was blessed to, when you say shovel ready, I got in the project probably about a year into their entitlement process, right? So I jumped in. I'm like, oh, this is great. I have some pros working with it. Now on the other side, I had a deal that I'm on like year number 3, where we bought a piece of land, me and a partner, and we took it through entitlement process and everything that you're talking about. Zoning, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, engineering, worked with all the architects, had the meetings in front of everyone and tried to defend our position and all of those things. So it's fully entitled, shovel ready, ready to go. But I resonate with a lot of things you're saying because we had these assumptions that were amazing 3 years ago with interest rates and HUD, 2% interest rate, 40-year AM, yada, yada, yada. And then came in today, we're like, oh, that's a different deal. It's not a $5 million raise. It's now a $15 million raise. Okay, that's a little different. And you know, that deal's like on the market right now, trying to sell land or an entitled piece. And it's the broker's price opinion looks pretty good. I'm excited about it, but it's just a change of direction. Something could change. And over the last couple of years, it's not a, I bought it, it's there, here's the financials, let's go. And two or 3 months later, we're in it. So
that's one of the things I've learned on development from two of the deals we're working on right now is just speed. Time kills deals. It's true for anything, but especially for development. Like, you just want to be going as fast as you can because all these little changes have big impacts for you. You can miss the market. You could have somebody else build a deal and flood it. Now your market's all wonky because you've got more supply than demand. And so it's just time kills deals, and you've seen it. One of our deals that we were working on financing for, we've been working on it since 2017. So we lost 2 years just on zoning. We got declined, then had a
son of a gun,
and had to reappeal and get it approved. Then they put this crazy contingency on us that we had to get a letter from the Corps of Engineers saying there's no wetlands, and it's all prairie land. There's no freaking wetlands anywhere, but that took 6 months. So it's a 2 year delay, all for zoning stuff.
Yeah, there we go. And the challenges of the developer, but that's the risk and that's the reward, right? It's like, here we go. Man, I'm excited for you. It sounds like you got all kinds of things going on. Before I forget, let me make sure if there's anybody listening that really wants to reach out to you, get into your world, who is it that you're trying to reach and where should they contact you?
Yeah, really a couple of people we're trying to reach, right? So obviously investors, accredited investors, even non-accredited, we're just looking for investors in general. And then also people who are working on capital raises and family offices. We're starting to transition to more institutional and family office space. We feel like we've been doing this long enough. We've got a pretty good process down for doing these deals and have a pretty good track record. And the easiest way to get in touch with me is just go to josephbramante.com. You go there, it's going to pop up all my links and keep it nice and simple for you. So don't need to. From there, you can see everything from the company website to joining our mailing list to attending our conference we have coming up to signing up, getting a waiting list for my book that's coming out. So we got all kinds of stuff for you, but josephbramante.com is the easiest way.
All right. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes. And if you're listening, encourage you, go reach out, do the same on our podcast. Written reviews are amazing. You guys have provided like 100+. We get right now anywhere from 15 to 20,000 downloads a month. So we really appreciate all the listeners and you supporting us and the show. And so thank you very much. We're humbled and appreciative. But for you, Joseph, I'm not going to let you go just yet, man. I want to hear maybe some of the future items. So it sounded like what I heard so far, right? You spent a lot of time in your earlier years learning, pushing through, figuring out how to acquire new multifamily deals or acquire multifamily deal. Now you're doing new development. And that was something maybe in 2016, you identified, hey, the cost, replacement cost versus build cost was those two things were coming tied together, cap rates, et cetera, were squeezed. So you took advantage of that. And it sounds like it's a great time. What does the future hold? What do you see, man? We got interest rates that are continuing to rise, that we record the show in October 2023. Right now, there's talks of the Fed potentially pausing, maybe continuing to raise. The forecast, if you look at the forward curves, it's interest rate maybe staying steady for another year, but continuing to be pretty high till 2024. Maybe there's some relief in 2025. There's opportunities for deals that are, if you can get in at the right off-market position, maybe somebody's having a little distress, maybe somebody is struggling to make another rate cap, somebody's struggling to pay the higher interest debt service if they bought floating rate variable loans. We're seeing some of the...
We call those blood properties.
The blood properties. We're seeing a lot of deals that are like finally hitting the market with another 5-7 years of assumable fixed rate debt, you know, 3% fixed rate. You're like, that's pretty damn strong if you can make their asking price work. What do you foresee for the future, and where are you headed? What's some predictions or insight there?
Yeah, you know, I did a live yesterday on my LinkedIn. We're just talking about this. And yeah, I think the issue is not with the rates being high. The issue is the uncertainty around the rates. If we just had more certainty about them being at this level, then we can operate. We know where the goalposts are, and the market will adjust.
The movement.
But when they keep moving them up,
yeah,
then you don't. That's so everybody's in this constant state of limbo because, like, are they going up? Are they going down? We don't know. So I think once the Fed gets really consistent and we start seeing a couple of months of where they're just holding the rates flat, you're going to see liquidity open up. You're going to see deals will transact again. We can transact at these rates we have in the past. So the issue isn't with the rates being high. The issue is nobody knows if they're going higher or lower just yet. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the market. You got Jamie Dimon over at Chase talking about, you know, rates going up higher, like 7%. And he making comments about regional banks might go under. And you saw regional banks, their ETF kind of started trending down. And so I think there's going to probably be a banking run with regional banks. And the problem with that is, you know, meaning those people who are having deposits with them transitioning and moving them all to Chase and these other big banks that are too big to fail. And I think the problem with that, though, is you've also got next year a lot of the office buildings coming up under foreclosure. Who owns all those buildings? Mostly regional banks. Regional banks are the lifeblood of a lot of development deals. Without them in play, you're not going to be doing development deals. So you're not going to be adding more supply. Your demand's going to go really crazy. So you're going to see rents continue to rise. But I do think that long term, whether it be a banking run or whether it be something else that causes the rates to come down, maybe be all these foreclosures in the office space, you're going to see the rates trend down, nothing crazy. But I think fourth quarter next year, maybe first quarter 2025, you'll see some relief. And I think they don't go down a lot. I think we kind of plateau around 3%. And that's just going to be the new normal, is that kind of baseline. But
yeah,
I think the bigger thing is we need certainty in the market. Once we get that certainty, we'll be okay.
Yeah, a little bit of consistency. I have a real good friend of mine. He's got a heavy finance background. When he was younger in college, they would call, after college, he would call distressed businesses. He worked for a private equity company. And what they would do was they were looking for companies going out in foreclosure, bad positions, and buy them pennies on the dollar kind of thing. And when he was reminding me, he goes, hey, the cycles, you're going to have them up and down. You're like, okay, it's a great reminder. But he goes, are you looking at variable rate interest loans today? And I go, man, I'm hurting from the ones that I'm in right now. And he goes, I know, because everyone did it backwards.
Yeah.
Everyone was using variable rate interest rate loans to buy distressed properties, hoping to renovate them, refinance into something consistent quickly, or flip them, whatever. He goes, but right now we are at the top. And he goes, so if you believe we're at the top, then it's actually now's the time, if you can get a variable rate interest rate loan, to write it down. And I'm like, oh man, the stomach of this stuff. It is just have, for me, it's a faith thing. It's a persistence thing. It's a, you know, his will, his time, his plan, just keep moving forward on the best you possibly can do. But yeah,
he's right though. I mean, the rates have really nowhere to go but up. Sorry, but down. And so we're on the back end of this, and we're doing variable rate deals. And to your point earlier, we are looking at some foreclosed deals, and it just feels weird, right? Buying a deal that some investors just completely lost everything on. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a deal at the lender's cost, and it's still too high. So, and it's like, wow, this is nuts. Think about where we were to where we are now, and like, how could that have happened in just a short period of time? But that's the reality.
So the regional bank side that you talk about too, it's, people forget we're not in a vacuum. It's not just this one, you know, thing, multifamily, and you're in South Texas, we're in South Texas, but all across the country, there is office space and commercial buildings that are that are projecting, hey, they're at 50 or 60% occupied. And that number is, we don't really know if it's really 50 or 60% occupied. Maybe that's how many bills are being paid, but there's even less occupancy because some of the companies, they're all remote and they have 2-year, 3-year, 5-year leases. They're paying without anybody actually being there. And that's the situation that they're in. So now when you have a cap rate change, that instead of a compressed cap rate, it's expanding the value or the price of the commercial or office real estate is going down. And like Joseph said, a lot of the regional banks, if they have a loan on their books that looks like an asset because it's paying them money, now that asset dollar amount is much smaller. So where they thought they had a lot more in their financial statement, an asset, maybe a different dollar figure. So that's kind of the implications, right, all the way across the country. And
yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest mess is watching. I mean, two things are going to happen next year. One, you're going to have a lot of office buildings going to foreclosure. And two, you're going to have a lot of these rate caps expiring in that first and second quarter of next year. So I think that's when we're going to see some of the stress in the multifamily unlodge and people just be forced to sell or do big raises. And then you're also going to see just a lot of office buildings come back to the bank, which, I mean, that's been coming. Like people have been seeing that for, you know, many years now. It's not anything new. So hopefully they've planned for it, but I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have these empty buildings. If somebody can figure out what to do. And we're looking at doing one resi conversion on an office building right now, but it's still expensive. It's still $100,000 a door to do it. It's not cheap.
Yeah. We forget about, there is a restroom and plumbing on a floor, but yeah. It's one for the whole floor or two for the whole floor, not
and
one.
And most
per
office
unit.
Buildings yeah. are chiller systems. And good luck trying to do a chiller system on any property today. Just, yeah. They don't, especially in the South, you know, where we are. Where it can be 100 degrees one day in Houston, and then it can be 60 degrees right now. It's 60 degrees because a cold front came through and it was 90 something 2 days ago.
Yeah.
It's got challenges, and I'm just curious to see how all this plays out, and very glad I didn't get into office.
Yeah. Give us before you go, is there any other item like, hey, we didn't get to talk about, you were hoping that I asked you about, or last bit of nugget or wisdom for any of the listeners, man?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Past Investor Conference we have coming up October 20th through the 22nd. It's a virtual conference, and it's one of the first of its kind that are solely focused on past investors. So like almost every other conference you go to, it's always for people like me and you to get better at what we do and to network and all that stuff. This one really is focused on perspective of the past investor. How do you underwrite a deal? So let's say me or you presents a deal to a past investor. How does the investor know if that's a good deal or not? So there's presentations on that. And then we also have speakers. Over 30 speakers will be there. It's all virtual, so you can attend from your house. And you got over 30 speakers talking about everything from multifamily, single family rental, short-term rental, manufactured housing. We've got oil and gas investing, vineyard investing, just the whole gambit of things you could invest in that maybe you didn't realize you could invest in, as well as a market update from Jay Pearson's just talking about the overall economy, which I think is always good to know about. So anyway, definitely check that out. PastInvestorConference.com is where you can find out, or just go to JosephBarante.com and it'll be a link for it there.
Right on, man. Sounds exciting.
And the best part is the tickets are free. So it's free ticket. Granted, you're probably going to pay for the recording because it's a dual track conference. There's always two presentations going on. So if you're good with only seeing half the show, then free ticket's all you.
Yeah, that sounds exciting, man. I'm excited for you. And sounds like a great event. A lot of good education, a lot of knowledge. You got to put a little time and effort and energy and educate yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. All the listeners, you guys are amazing. Thank you very much to all of our sponsors. We appreciate everything all the support that you guys throw our way. 5talents.capital, if you are interested in learning more about the opportunities that we're talking about, happy to reach out to you and discuss new passive investment opportunities we have in our arena. So thank you very much, Joseph. Appreciate your time, brother.
See you, Abel.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Five Talents Podcast with myself, your host, Abel Pacheco. We really appreciate you liking, following, subscribing, and leaving all the written reviews for the Five Talents Podcast. Each week, we're going to continue to bring interviews with private equity folks, VCs, advisors, financial planners, strategists, tax strategists, and other stewards of capital, many of which advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So we appreciate you joining. Also, if you want to be notified of monthly future events we're hosting or attending, and if you want exclusive access to the same investment opportunities that have largely been reserved for the wealthiest 1%, many of which you've rarely ever heard about, go now to our website, watch our wealth building case study, and register to be added to our investment club. We're going to send you future opportunities, and you'll be able to watch all the moves that we make firsthand. Your investment journey is waiting for you to take the next step. So what is the next step? Go to www.5talents.capital. That's 5talents.capital, and register today. Thank you again. We can't wait to bring you the next show. And thank you for liking and subscribing.